Our main speaker tonight is Jack G from Huntington Beach, California.
Hi, I'm Jack Grisham, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you. Every time you guys do that, I always think of good as, you ever see Good as It Gets with Jack Nicholson, right? And then the one guy, his one little buddy goes, I love you. He goes, man, he goes, if that would do it for me, I'd be all right. But anyway, I think about that sometimes, you know, sitting in these meetings and, a lot of love. And sometimes I wish that love would keep people sober, but, you know, a lot of times it just doesn't. You know, we can't love them into sobriety, but we can love them, and we can keep loving them. And sometimes it's hard to keep loving when we lose people and see them go through stuff. And I think about our new people coming up and getting a book and introducing themselves, and I think, where's it going to go? You know, where's it going to go? Maybe Arizona? I'm glad that you went to Arizona and stayed out of Huntington. But anyway... But you know, when you see new people, you stay sober a while, and then you see new people, and you say, well, what are they going to do? You know, are they going to fall in love with this? Are they going to fall in love with the steps? Are they going to stay here, or is their journey going to go somewhere else? And you hear about it sometimes, you know, our long-timers said, you know, don't leave before the miracle. You know, the sad thing is, sometimes the miracle is that you come onto this planet in human form, and you spend your whole life asleep, and you die without ever waking up. And that's also a miracle. It's an unpleasant miracle, but it does happen. And my first wife died of a drug overdose. Most of my friends have died of drug overdoses. My nephew, drug overdose. I can go down the list, you know. And you want them to wake up, and you want them to fall in love with this deal, and you want them to catch that spark, and it doesn't always happen, you know. And it's scary, and it's something that we got to remember. I think it's very important for us to remember that we're dealing with a hopeless disease, you know. And whatever. Let's. How about a fun story? I'll tell you a fun story. I'm an idiot, and I get involved in a lot of craziness, you know. 25 years sober, so what? 52 years old, so what? I'm in for foolishness at all times, you know. My buddies and I used to call it going on a thriller, you know, because I'd hear them complain about it, because they'd get in the car with me and they'd end up these crazy places, and I'd hear them on their cell phone going, I'm on a fucking thriller with Jack, God damn it. You know, it's like, and I was thinking about it one day. There was this woman who was, this was right after 9/11, and I was wearing a beard. I grew my beard out really long and had a turban, so I'd wear it every day because I wanted, I don't know what I was doing, but whatever it was, that's what I was doing. So normally what I would do is I would get up in the morning and I'd check my phone messages, because that's the first thing. Check the phone messages. What's going on? What's happened? Blah, blah, blah. But instead of checking the phone messages, I call my buddy Titus, and Titus is living two blocks over from me and he doesn't have a car. So I call Titus, I go, hey, Titus, man, you want to go to the meeting? I'll come pick you up. He's going, Jack, cool, bro, pick me up. Okay, great. So now I'm going to pick up Titus. Now I check my phone messages, and I get a message from this chick that we call the Energizer Bunny. Because she's, like, really, like, has that sexy thing going. You know what? I don't know if you know what. Now I'm just going the other way, way back. You know, like, anyway, it's that kind of thing where, like, they ooze that sex appeal out. You know, it's like you get next to them and you're like, oh, man, turn it down. It's, like, gnarly. But I'm also an idiot. I get this message and she's like, I got to go to a meeting, baby. I need you to pick me up. And I'm going, shit, I already called Titus. And I'm bummed, right? So then I call her up on the phone. I call this girl up on the phone. I go, hey, what's going on? I go, you need to go to a meeting. She goes, oh, yeah, baby, I'm torn up. And I go, oh, well, cool. I'll come and get you. I got to swing by and pick up Titus. She goes, Titus? She goes, that sounds like a young black man. I go, it is. She goes, you and a young black man picking me up? I go, yeah. She goes, all right. Now, I'm an idiot, right? So it's like, so I don't think anything about that. You know, it's like, I mean, if someone doesn't walk up to me and go like this, I have no idea. I have no idea what they're talking about, right? So I laugh, because I think it's funny, because I would say something like that, right? And so I laugh it off, and I go, oh, yeah, I go, we're coming to get you, cool. And she goes, oh, but I look like a whore. I go, well, we're going to a meeting. Who gives a shit down there? What are you fucking? And she goes, why don't you just grab some shit and change in the car, man? Come on, we gotta go. And she goes, oh, we'd never make it if I did that. I'm like, so I still don't know what's going on, right? I'm like, and it's early in the morning, right? And I'm like, yeah, okay, well, whatever you gotta do, man. She goes, well, I'm just going down there to pick up a newcomer girl that I can sleep with. And I laugh again, because I think that's funny. I think she's screwing with me, right? So I laugh. I'm thinking, okay, because that also sounds like something I might say as a joke, you know, just to, like, get people upset. And so then I pick up Titus, and I go, hey, Titus, man. I go, this is a weird one, man. I go, I don't know what's going to happen here. We're on a bit of a thriller. And Titus is like, I heard about your thrillers, man. I go, I know, but we're going in on one. So we go over to this girl's house, and of course, okay, I got a beard, turban, right? So let you know how we're rolling, and I'm rolling with Titus, it's Titus and I, and we go to the house, and I call her, I go, come out. She goes, you gotta come in and get me, baby. You gotta come in and get me, I can't make it downstairs. And I'm thinking, oh, God, man, she must really be torn up. I go, hang on, Titus, I'll go get her. So I go and look over the back fence, and here's some guy in the backyard, and he's going like this. And he's like just wiggling, right? And I go, hey, you know, turban beard guy leaning over the fence. A couple days after 9/11, right? You know, I lean over the fence. I'm like, hey, is so-and-so here? He goes, oh, yeah, she's waiting for you, man. She's waiting for you. And I'm like, all right. So I go inside the house, and the whole house is packed up into boxes. This is really worthless. There's a conference tape, but let's just keep going. The lights are off. So anyway, so the whole house is packed in boxes like they're moving or something, right? And I'm tripping. And the guy goes, she's upstairs, man. She's upstairs. So I walk upstairs, right? And I still have no idea what's going on, right? And I look to the room, to the bedroom, to the left. It's all packed up. I look to the bedroom to the right, and it's immaculate. Like, the curtains are, there's like tapestries on the curtains, and there's incense and candles. And I walk in, and there's a four-poster bed, and I look, and there's ropes on the post, right? And I'm sitting there, like, I'm thinking, what's going on, right? And she walks out of the bathroom, and this skinny, like, thing with a boa around her neck with her deal out, and she's got a crack pipe in her mouth. And she looks at me, I go, hey, are we going to the meeting? And she goes, oh, I'm just getting that last hit, baby. You know how we do. And just, I'm like, I don't know how we do. Put the pipe down. Let's go. Titus is in the car. You tell him to come up. No, he's not coming up. Let's go. Let's go. So I start to get her, and she puts a pipe down, walks away, right? And then she goes, he's going to kill us. He's going to kill us. I'm like, he's going to kill us? What are you talking about? She goes, my boyfriend, he's coming back, and if he finds out I went to a meeting with you, he's going to kill us both. We're supposed to be having a gangbang. I'm like, what? And I'm 20 years sober, man, or whatever the hell it was at the time, you know? And I'm just like, what? I go, and then all of a sudden, Tweaker from downstairs yells, he's coming up. Like, what? So now I'm trapped in crack house with a beard and a turban with angry boyfriend coming up, man. So I'm thinking, I got to get the hell out of here. I'm thinking of getting the open ground. So if I got to fight, I can fight my way out of it, you know? And I get downstairs, and oh, my God, again, the guy's in the car, and he's sitting out. He's pulled the car up, and he's naked. Oh, my God, the whole thing was just, I just wandered into wildness. And Tyson's in the car going, what's going on in there? What's going on? I'm like, dude, you don't even want to know what's going on in there. So anyway, whatever that had to do with anything. And but the crazy thing is, you know, I got to the meeting, and that little voice inside says, go back. Go back. Ha 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 ha! But I did not go back. Anyway, so, and I really am sober, in case some of you are now doubting it. But I don't know. You know, AA and being sober, and it's fun. And it's supposed to be fun, and it's supposed to be weird, and it's supposed to be, I mean, life's weird. I don't know if you're aware of that, man. Life is weird. When you wake up, this is trippy. You know, I mean, there's like, when you wake up, it's like, where am I, man? You know, it's like, this is, I've come to in some frightening places. And, you know, I've come to, and my friend Sherry used to say, she goes, but when I was drinking, I never came to doing anything good. You know what I mean? Like, I never came to helping an old lady cross the street or anything, you know? But I have come to in some wacky places in AA, man, where all of a sudden I just look around and say, how'd I get here? You know, how did I get here? Unbelievable. And anyway, I tell you, I got to you guys. I was living at my mother's. And if it was up to my mother, I would still be living at my mother's house right now, man. You know, the Al-Anon people never got one hand on my mom, man. Not one. The blood of the lamb was spray painted on our front door, and the Al-Anons just drifted right by. They never got up in there, man. And I had the kind of mom that I would go to jail. Seriously, I would go to jail, and when I got out of jail, my mom would go, they're always picking on you, sweetheart. I would be passed out in the neighbor's yard anytime, day or night, with my pants down. If the neighbors had the balls enough to complain, my mother would go, leave Malone, he's an artist. Yeah, and I'll tell you, it has not stopped. I mean, since I've already ruined this talk, I'm going to just keep going with it. I'll tell you, my little daughter got busted. I got five kids now. And my 14-year-old, but she wasn't 14 at the time, she was about 12. She comes to me one morning, she goes, Pops. They all call me Pop. She goes, Pops, I got something I got to tell you. I go, what's up, sweetheart? She goes, I toilet papered a house. I don't feel so good about it. I go, oh, okay. What do you want me to do about it? It's like, thanks for telling me. Go play. I don't know. What do you want me to say here, sweetie? And then she starts to walk away. I go, hey, wait, really quick. Why'd you do it? And she goes, oh, the lady was against solar power. I go, oh, right on, man. It's like, you couldn't have wakened me up on that, man? You couldn't have called me in? I would have went. You know, it's like, so. Anyway, so I don't think anything of it. And I don't think anything of it. A couple days later, her mother calls me on the phone and says, you've got to go to parenting classes. I go, what do you mean, I've got to go to parenting classes? What are you talking about? She goes, oh, that toilet paper deal. I go, what? Yeah? She goes, your daughter's on probation. I go, probation? Probation for what? Toilet papering? No, no. So they send me to parenting classes, right? And I'm furious. I got 12-year-old freckle-faced baby girl beach volleyball player with me. He's gnarly. You know, there's like all sorts of like murder guys and whatever in there. And here's this little,
what's going on, Dad?
You know, just this little, you know, whatever, right? So I'm furious. So now I want to talk to the detective in charge. And because I got rights. You know what I'm saying? It's like I'm a taxpayer. I got to talk. So I don't pay them, but I file. But anyway, so I do render unto Caesar what belongs to Caesar. So anyway, so I sit down, I make an appointment with this detective, because I'm pissed, right? And I'm hot. And you know, sometimes we run a little hot, we've got rights, right? So I sit next to the detective, I got baby girl sitting next to me, man. I go, what is the matter with you? Sitting across the desk from this guy. I go, live here, you got people shooting people on the street, killing people, drugs and alcohol, drunken driving, murders, rapes going on, and you're arresting baby girl for toilet papering? And he looks at me and says, what do you know about the case? I go, the case? He goes, that's what I thought. And he pulls out this folder, this big folder, and he pushes it towards me, and he opens it up, and on the very first page, there's in magic marker, on the side of this house, a poorly drawn penis, and it says, suck my whatever on the side of the house. And I look at my kid, and she goes, Anyway, this is the point to go back to my mother. So now, now I have lunch with my mom. And my mom goes, what's going on down there? I go, she's on probation. Point to my kid. My mom goes, for what? I go, vandalism. Vandalism. They egged this house. They toilet papered it. They wrote wieners with magic marker on the side of the house. I go, the only reason she didn't get a spanking is they were poorly drawn wieners, Mom. It's like I could tell that she had never actually seen a wiener. You know what I'm saying? It was like, it looked like a beach ball with a triangle on the top of it. And I go, man, I go, they vandalized the house, Mom. And my mom looks at me and goes, oh, so what? How close was it to Halloween? I go, what? She goes, how close was it to Halloween? I go, what do I know? She goes, just kids being kids. Let them have their fun. I'm like, oh, my God, now you're trying to kill her, too. Anyway, it has not stopped. So what has this got to do with sobriety? I don't know. But I guess it's got to do with living, really. Being a parent, having kids, growing up, growing to work, doing stuff. Sobriety, this book is wonderful. I love the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. We're going to talk about it. But guess what? It's just a book. That's it. Just a book. Just a book. Beautiful ideas and concepts inside the book. But the book itself is just a book. That's all it is, you know. Anyway, I'll tell you, I got into this thing because I love the book so. I do a book class, and you're always welcome. Every Monday night from 6 to 6:45, people come to my house, and I run through the book one line at a time with them, man. And, you know, and I mean, really one line at a time. And it takes a long time. Some people leave my house, and they come back 2 months later. We've only moved a paragraph down, you know. And the last time, it took us 2 years to get through the book. So it's a commitment. And anyway... So, but I love the book, and I start tearing apart the book and going through it, you know, like an alkie, and all of a sudden I'm getting old dictionaries, and I'm getting this and finding out where did Bill take this from and where did this happen. And we were talking about a good friend of mine, Jack Holub, and he's an archivist, and he was giving me stuff and, you know, just going through tearing the book apart. But know what I started doing after that? I started judging you guys. I started going to the meeting and somebody would share, and I go, that's bullshit. Somebody else share, I go, he's doing it wrong. You know, and I'm a confrontational alcoholic. So somebody would say something in the meeting crazy, and I'd come up to him and go, where'd you get that? He'd go, I got it from my sponsor, got it from his sponsor. I go, then your grand sponsor's an idiot. it was rough, man. And it got to the point where it was Jack Grisham party of one, basically, at the meeting. Now, at the same time that's going on, I want to talk to somebody about God stuff. I want to talk about God to people, you know. And it's hard to find people. You think it wouldn't be that hard, but it is. It's hard to find people to talk to about God and spiritual concepts sometimes. Because in here, we talk about God way different than they talk about out there. Like, even go down the street, and they talk about God like, God, 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 right? We talk about God like, yeah, God and I ran over on break, got a couple of burgers and fries from McDonald's. You know, it's like, I mean, we talk about God like little G God. Oh, yeah, God. You know, it's like, that's you know, it's different. And people trip on us. Sometimes we don't think because we hang out with each other a lot, so we use a lot of language and weird chanting and stuff, you know, and people just wander in out of here first day, and they're like, oh my God, what's going on? It gets a little wacky in here, man. And anyway, so I want to talk to people about God, and a lot of the guys I want to talk to about God, they're dead. You know what I mean? I want to question some people, but they're dead. And anyway, so I'm a big fan of Father DeMello. If you guys ever get a chance to read Anthony DeMello, it's great. You know, it comes with a warning. The first time I looked at Anthony DeMello, it says, danger, don't read this, your soul could be in danger. He's great. Anyway, but DeMello's dead, so I can't talk to him. So I'm looking all over trying to find somebody to talk, and I end up finding this Jesuit brother who lives right by my house. So I'm tearing the big book apart line by line, then I'm visiting Jesuit brother. And I'm talking to him about the Spirit and whatever. Then I start tearing apart the New Testament line by line. And I come in one time to Brother Charlie. I go, Brother Charlie, what's the best translation of that New Testament? And I'm thinking he's going to tell me to learn Aramaic or something, whatever, right? And I'm in, because I'm a fanatic, and I'm in. And he looks at me and goes, wow. He goes, Jack, he goes, it's such a shame that you're that hung up on the words. I go, huh? He goes, you know what? He goes, I don't want to hear another word of scripture coming out of your mouth. As a matter of fact, I want you to shut the book and shut up. Walk away. I'm like, huh? He goes, I want you to walk away. I want you to stop it. I want you to stop studying. I want you to stop tearing apart the book. He goes, what I want you to do is I want you to go down the beach. And I take a walk on the beach every morning. He goes, when you go to take your walk, I want you to ask God to walk with you. And I want you to be quiet. So I did that. I walked down the beach and I asked God to walk with me. And I listened while I was walking. And I thought about what had been happening. The word meditation in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's actually used in that book. It's kind of like a Christian-y based thing, and it means to contemplate, really. It means think about what you read and how does it apply to you. Read something, read a prayer, read the daily meditation in the morning, whatever's going on, and then think, how can you add this into your life? How does this apply? So I'm out there and I'm taking that walk and I'm meditating, I'm contemplating on what's happening. What I realized was, by tearing apart the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous by line, word by word, definition by definition, what I was trying to do was control the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. If I could pin you down to a line or a phrase, then I controlled you. I also realized that what I was doing with my God at that time, if I could pin my God down to a line or a phrase, then I controlled God. I took another look, I stopped, and I went back to look at that big book that to me was so rigid, so harsh, so rigid, so line by line, so black and white, you know, all that. And I looked at that book, and all of a sudden, I couldn't get a grasp on it anymore. Like, I couldn't get a hold of each line, and I'm looking at it, and everything that I knew before, it just completely disappeared. And I looked back at the book, and I started looking at what was so rigid, and I started with the third step prayer. I love that third step prayer. It's beautiful in that book. It is so beautiful. And I tell guys all the time, look, don't just memorize it. Think about what you're saying when you say a prayer like that. Think about it. And it's great. We get our people to say that prayer and to memorize it. It's a beautiful prayer. Do you know what Bill says after the third step prayer in the big book? You bet. The wording is optional. You can say anything you want as a third step prayer. Some guys' third step prayer is, fuck it, I can't take this shit anymore. Sorry, I mean, I've already ruined the tape, so it's like we might as well just keep going. I mean, and if you think about it, that is a very valid prayer. That is a very valid prayer. And I've seen more of those guys stay sober. The guys that are so done, so had it, there is no argument left. That is called surrender and ego deflation. When they are so gone that they don't care what's happening. Whatever you want, I'm in. I'm in. That prayer. Then I look at the fourth step in the big book. Love that fourth step. And you look in the book and it's lines and columns and the way it's laid out and a graph and all that stuff and it looks bitching. Do you know what? Do you know what Bill says before the graph and the lines and columns? We were usually as definite as this example. Usually, not always. Sometimes we do other shit. Oh my God! And so then, I go back and I look in the back of the book, and there's a guy who does a four-step with Dr. Bob in the back of the book, our co-founder, Bill and Bob. Bill and Bob, our co-founder, right? A very valid person in Alcoholics Anonymous, Bob. Not just Bill, Bob. And you know what Bob's idea of a four-step was? He sat across from you, you told him your story, and he took notes as you were talking. And then when you were done talking, Bob gave you your defects of character. You don't think that's a valid four-step? I tell guys all the time, you want to do a four-step so you can tell everybody in the room you did exactly like the book? Go. I'm a big fan of that. Do it so you can say you did it. You want to do a real four-step? Give pencil and paper to everyone that knows you and have them fill it out. I'll tell you right now, you will have a list of defects of character the likes of which you have never seen. Just for the hell of that, hell of it, I did it one time on one of my birthdays. Yeah, I know we won't talk about it. It's like, yeah, God, remove all of these. Anyway, so, and do it anonymously so they're more honest. Anyway, but all through the book, I'm looking through the book and I'm saying, and I'm looking for the rigidity anymore. I'm looking for this and I'm thinking, where is it? And I look in the book and Bill says, sometimes we do this and sometimes we do that. And sometimes we do this and sometimes we do that. And I'm looking all through the book and I'm thinking, God damn, where is it? Where did it go? I look in the 11th step. He says, we're going to make mistakes. We roll anyway. You know, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, man, wait, no, please give me something I can hang on to that'll help my fear. My fear-based recovery. Please give me something black and white I can hang on to. And there was nothing. Nothing to hang on to. And I go to the end, and Bill sums up the whole program in three lines. The end of 164, abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you have and join us. That's it. That's the whole program. The whole program. And it's so crazy. And I tell you, I do this thing on Saturday night in Long Beach. You're welcome if you guys ever get out there. And it's called Conversations with a Drunk. And it's a meeting. And what I do is I get longtime sobriety people. And we sit in a couple of chairs. And we just talk about what it was like being sober. We don't spend any time on drunk log. It's all day one in AA, how did you get a sponsor? How'd you do a third step? How'd you do a fourth? And we talk with these guys, and I've talked with people 30, 40, 50 plus years, and they've all done an inventory, and they've all abandoned their life to how they understood God, and they've all cleaned up the past, and they've all admitted their first admittance of powerless, that they knew they couldn't do it and knew this higher power. They all study, love, live this program, and they all do it a little bit differently. But the core of what is in our beautiful book is what they do the same. That's the core. Anyway, and just the last thing I'm going to say about this book. Like I said, I love it. I love this book, and I love it dearly, man. And I do read it, and I enjoy it. And I don't know why these people sometimes they say, oh, it's antiquated. I don't know what you're reading. You know what I'm saying? Maybe poorly written in areas, but... But it's a great book, man. There's so much stuff, and it's actually kind of fun. If you get into it, the book can be really fun. Because you got to think, some of this was a hustle a little bit. Like, they don't realize, like, a lot of people, when you get into the history, you find out there was a bit of a hustle going on in AA, you know? Because their depression was going on, everything was shit, nobody had any money. And then they thought, oh my God, we found a cure. We got a way to get people out. This is the shit. Let's sell this. We're going to sell it to big companies. Come on, pump it up, man. We're going to get money. We're going to sell it to big companies. That was the plan. They wanted to sell it to big companies and make cash. Trouble was, nobody wanted it. So now we give it away. That's what we do. But so thinking about that, sometimes I go through the book, and it's not just thinking about, it's like, what the guys that wrote the book, what were they doing? Do you know what I mean? What was going on with them? Like, when you study the book and look at it, think about what was going on at the time. I get into it with people sometimes about the third tradition, our only requirement, right? And they'll go, oh, the drugs and the alcohol. I go, no, wait a minute, man. Think about that when they were talking about that, the only requirement. Let's go back to America in 1930, 1940. What did America look like then? What did our club situation look like then? Were blacks and whites allowed to be all in the same place? No. Some people don't realize that there were black-only and white-only AA meetings. I mean, think about that. There were a lot of places that you weren't allowed to go if you weren't a special religion, a special this, special that. So when Bill talks about in the book, he says, no, this is open to anybody. Anybody. Think how bold that was at the time he wrote that. Where he said, no, bullshit on that. We don't care what color. We don't care what you believe in. This is open to anybody that has a desire to stop drinking. That's bad. I mean, you really got to think about that and appreciate the beauty and the balls that was. to say something like that, man. I mean, to really think about what was going on in our country at the time and the fact that they said, no, everyone is welcome here. Here, everyone is welcome. Anyway, there's something else funny in the book. I was reading it one time, and I'm thinking about these guys being hustlers, because they were hustlers, right? You know, they're scam artists, and they're hustlers, and, you know, whatever they were doing. So, anyway, so I'm going through the book one time, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, I just found the little sales pitch of AA. Like, if you ever watch TV late at night, and they're running commercials, and they're running, like, Viagra commercials late at night, and the people are like, they're happy, and the guy's, like, rubbing his pant leg. You know what I mean? They're just like, everybody's just, like, smiling, and there's unicorns going by. You know what I mean? It's like this beautiful thing, and it's all, yeah, tonight's going to be good. This is good, bro. And that's the kind of tone of voice is used. So I'm looking at the big book, and I'm reading it, and I go, oh, my God, I just found the sales pitch for Alcoholics Anonymous, and here it is. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. That's just so funny. I mean, you can almost see Bill going like this, right? But, you know, it's like, oh, my God, we're so on this. And okay. But knowing they're hustlers, knowing they got a little street game going on, right? So whatever happens at the end of those commercials, then what happens? At the very end, then they start rolling small print real fast. Hey, if this lasts longer than 4 hours, you better get the hospital. You know, they start rolling whatever, right? So I'm laughing. After I find the sales pitch, I'm laughing about the sales pitch, and I go a little bit over and I go, oh my God, I just found the small print. I mean, I was teasing about the sales pitch, right? And then I turned into the small print. Here it is right here. It may mean the loss of many nights' sleep, greater interference with your pleasures, interruptions to your business. It may mean sharing your money in your house, counseling frantic wives and relatives, innumerable trips to police courts, sanitariums, hospitals, jails, and asylums. Your telephone may jangle at any time of the day or night. Your wife may sometimes say she is neglected. A drunk may smash your furniture in your home or burn a mattress. You may have to fight with him if he is violent. Sometimes you'll have to call a doctor and administer sedatives under his direction. Another time you may have to send for the police or an ambulance. Yeah. All right. And you keep telling me how much they weren't hustlers. All right. Anyway, so. All right. So now let's get back to reality. All right. So here's how I got to you guys. I'm living at my mother's house. And one of my buddies gets arrested on a cocaine trafficking charge. Now, I think it's funny. I believe that more alcoholics are created in court than anywhere else in the world, right? It's not the local bar, it's not the first drink, it's court. It is court, because I'll tell you, hundreds of thousands of us go into court every day, non-alcoholic, and we get in front of the judge. Judge says, Mr. Smith, you're looking at a year sentence, but if you were an alcoholic, you could do a 30-day treatment program.
I'm an alcoholic.
So now everybody's one now, right? Not so. For the people that are brand new in here, I'm going to do you a favor, man. If you come in brand new and you start blowing smoke up your ass, telling us how happy you are to be launching in and making amends for all the shit you have done, we know you're not telling the truth, okay? It's like my buddy Frank Honeycutt used to say, man, if you're happy to be here, you're too sick to stay, young man. And because there is, once again, going back, ego deflation. There is some ego deflation that got to take place, and no one ever feels good when their ego gets deflated. Anyway, and sometimes people will blow smoke up our ass, and I tell them, stop right now. Learn from day one to just tell us the truth. If you don't like us, if you're mad, whatever, just tell us the truth, because we have to love you anyway. It's our code. It's our code. Love and tolerance is our code. It's not your code yet. It will be, but it's our code. So we gotta love you. I mean, you could basically come into one of our meetings, stand up and just go like this to the whole room, And we just clap and tell you to keep coming back. Yeah. Oh, you keep coming? Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, and I've done it. So anyway, and the other reason I found out, do you know that no matter what you say in AA, somebody will disagree with you?
Yeah.
No, I mean, have you ever gone to some of these meetings? Yeah. I mean, it is crazy. You can stand up here and say the lake is wet. Somebody else will get up and go, not along the edge, it's not. No, sir. It's like, what? It's so crazy, man. And because I made that joke about more alcoholics created in court, and it's a joke, but it's a funny joke because it's true. That's what makes it funny, right? And I said at this convention one time, and this dude walks up to me, man, and he's huge, and I'm huge. I'm like 6'4", 280, and I'm lying about the 280 still. And and I'm huge, and this guy's over me, and he's covered with bad tattoos. He goes, can I talk to you, man? I go, yeah. I go, what's up, bro? He goes, I did the year, dog. Well, then you're a fucking stupid alcoholic. God damn it, man. If you don't got enough sense to cop a plea to stay out of jail, you better get up on in here and start working some steps, my man. Because you're going to die out there. Anyway, and that's what happened to my buddy. That's what happened to my buddy. He gets arrested, he goes to court, he says he's got a problem. I was getting loaded with him 2 weeks before that. There was no problem mentioned. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't like, hey, Jack, you know what? I think I got a problem. I'm going to set out on that last line of blow. Why don't you clean that up for us? No. It was, are you cutting that even, dog? There was no problem mentioned, right? And I'll tell you, you have never seen a more accurate cut than when you give your buddy the razor blade and say, okay, you cut it, but I pick first. Oh, God. They take it down to the millimeter of a gram. It's like, that's even. And they're sweating. Anyway, and that is not an outside issue. Anyway, So that's what my buddy does. He pleads that he's got a problem and he goes to court. Okay, great. He goes to court. That's fine. The H&I guys get up there and they send him to treatment. You H&I guys get up there and start healing on him or whatever the hell you're doing up in there on those people. Get him all pumped full of the spirit or whatever's going on. And they kick him loose and he comes back to Long Beach with his crazy walking hand in hand with Bill, Bob, and Jesus trip or whatever's going on. And he's going to save the neighborhood. Where does he go to first? My mother's house. Stop number one. And I get this. I go, hey. I go, what's up, bro? He goes, you got a problem, man. I go, what? He goes, you got a problem. I go, no, man, I saw you go down. You got the problem, champ. He goes, you're an alcoholic. I go, no, I'm not. Live with my mom. Yeah. Let me tell you what was going on at mommy's house at the time. I got warrants out for my arrest. So what? I always have warrants out for my arrest. I also have people trying to kill me, both real and imagined. I get a girl pregnant. I say, move in. Move into my mom's house with me. Let's have a baby. Same time I move her in, I fall in love with a girl of questionable age, and I take her to Mexico and marry her. Yeah, that's right. That's where the laughter stops, right there. Right there. That's what's going on at mommy's house. And my mother is co-signing all of it. See, anyway, so my buddy goes, you're an alcoholic. Now I walk him away from the front door. I don't need my mother hearing that kind of talk outside. And he goes, come to a meeting with me. I go, a meeting? A meeting of what? He goes, 12-step meeting. Come on down. I go, you go, bro. You go. You got popped. You go. He goes, come to a meeting. No. No, thank you. Come to the meeting. No. Come on. Come. No. Come to the. No. Come. Come to the meeting. No. Come on. Come to the meeting, dude. One meeting. No. Come to the meeting. No. Come on, dude. Let's go. Come to the meeting. No. Come on, man. Come on, dude. Come to the meeting. For me. Come to the meeting. Go. No. Come on, dude. Come to the meeting. Okay. I'll go to your meeting. Now, do you know why I said, okay, I'll go? That's right, because I'm an alcoholic. And I'll say anything to get you to leave me alone, including I'm Jack Grisham and I'm an alcoholic. One of the problems I have with Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's okay to have problems with Alcoholics Anonymous, don't buy into fear-based recovery. It's okay. It's okay to question. It's okay to ask. It's okay, man. It's like sometimes we treat these new people like they're fucking idiots. Most of them have had more successful jobs than you have had, sir. They're not idiots. They're hungry. They want to know. We want to give them something. They come in hungry. They want. We need to give. Anyway, sorry about that. All right. My sponsor before I came, he goes, try to tone it down a little bit. All right. Yeah, Joe. All right. So anyway, so I don't even know where I was. All right. Oh, here's one of my problems I have. One of the problems, it's okay to have problems with us. Bill had problems with us. That's why we have the traditions. Do you ever wonder about that? Bill created something so bitchin', and he knew he was going to die and leave it in our hands. Damn it. I mean, can you imagine how scared he was? You know, we got to protect this. Anyway, one of the problems I have is we're too quick to get the new man and the new woman to say they're an alcoholic. And I'm not even talking about, we're not even talking about the other half of the measure. We're only talking about first measure right here. We're not even talking about the other half. First measure. We're too quick to get the new man and the new woman to say they're an alcoholic. And we push them into it. We say, say you're an alcoholic. Say you're an alcoholic. Say, don't say addict, goddammit. Just say you're an alcoholic. And you got these people claiming alcoholism, and they don't even know what they're saying. It's terrible. And we push it. And have you ever been to a meeting where they go around the room before the meeting starts, and they introduce themselves, and the guy's there on a court card? I'm Jim, alcoholic. I'm Frank, alcoholic. I'm Tony, alcoholic. I'm Bud. I'm here on a court card. Woo! The whole room goes crazy. Like a bunch of monkeys let out of a cage. They just start shaking, shaking. We got one. We got one. We got one. We got one. And then when the meeting starts, the whole meeting is dedicated to Bud and his denial. I remember when I, too, came in on a court card, Bud. Fuck, ridiculous. He's not even an alcoholic. He was playing golf. He shot a bad round. He went in the clubhouse. He had a couple of cocktails. He got hammered. He pulled out and he got popped. Popped for a 502 drunk driving, whatever the hell they're calling it these days. And when Bud went to court and the judge says, you're looking at a year, Bud was smart enough to say, oh no, I'm an alcoholic, Your Honor. Because it's a scam. There's a scam involved in that. Some people don't realize that people use AA as a scam all the time. They use us as a scam to get out of a long jail sentence. But sometimes they wake up, and the scam's on them. Anyway, so this guy goes there, and he's not really an alcoholic, and the next time it goes around the room and they introduce themselves, I'm Frank, alcoholic, John, alcoholic, Bill, alcoholic, I'm Bud, I'm also an alcoholic. Now, does he think he's any more of an alcoholic than he was before? No, 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 no. He just wants you to leave him alone. Leave me alone, sign my court card, let me get out of here. Rightly so, man. Rightly so. Smart man. Smart man. Doesn't make him an alcoholic. If you're brand new saying you're an alcoholic, what you're claiming, I mean, you're in an AA meeting, we got some AA talk going around, we're reading shit out of the book, you're in an AA meeting, and you're saying you're one of us. So what you're basically claiming is a fatal illness. Fatal means it's going to kill you. Stop worrying about the mole on your back. It's the booze. And not only is it a fatal illness, you're sitting in with here, claiming you're one of us. We got literature that we got here. According to our literature, it is a fatal illness that only a God experience can arrest. Do you know how frightening that is? Could you imagine rolling into a doctor's office, you're giving your tests, whatever your tests are, you give them, you roll back 3 days later, and you say, hey, how'd it go, man? And he goes, nope. What do you mean, nope? Fatal. What? Fatal. You're done. What? Fatal. Yes, you don't even need to pay your bill, sir. You're done. Fatal. And though not a religious man, I favor prayer in cases such as yours. That is fucking terrifying. I mean, think about it. Could you imagine going to your doctor and hearing that? Do you know there's a story in our big book that says that? And it's at the start of the book. It's not even, it's up front. It's not even in the back. The doctor says, hey, I don't even like treating people like you. And though not a religious man, I favor prayer. That's terrifying. You go into the doctor and the doctor says you got mono or something else going on downstairs and you freak out. And those can all be cured with little antibiotics. You come in here and we say, you got alcoholism. You go, what's up? Get it! Get it! Pa, pa, pa! I mean, but think about it. I know it's a little ridiculous, but you know what I mean? And this is what I'm going back, and let's go back to the miracle where I said sometimes the miracle is people spend their whole life asleep and they don't wake up. They don't wake up. They don't realize they have a fatal illness. They don't realize they're dealing with a hopeless situation. They don't realize that our love won't save them. Scary. Scary. And yet I see these same people not take commitments, not get involved, not ask questions, not do anything. But they say they got a fatal illness. It's crazy. Crazy to me. I've been shot at a number of times, as you can imagine. And let me tell you something. I've been with some like really gnarly guys when I was getting shot at. And I'll tell you, when people start shooting, everyone goes down on the ground. Are you aware of that? Like the minute, bing, bing, bing. Like everyone's down. And their voices go up like 2 octaves. Did you see where that was coming from? That man! So it's like, they're down, right? It's not until when the guy drives away, then they stand up and go, I would have beat his ass, man. I'm going to beat his ass. But the bottom line is when the shots are being fired, they think they're going to die, so they're down. They're moving. They're jumping. You come in here brand new, say you're an alcoholic, saying shots are being fired, saying you're going to die, saying a gun against your head, trigger's cocked, bullet in the chamber. The only thing that can stop this gun from firing is God. I don't got one. And you're not ducking. You're standing there saying, hit me, bitch. Hit me. Fucking terrifying. Terrifying. Anyway, I roll into my first meeting. My mother gives me some money to go to the meeting. She found out I was going, man. And she's like, are you going to that A&A, sweetheart? Yes, I am, mother. Would you like a couple dollars for coffee? I need 40. And who am I to stop her from being helpful? Anyway, so I roll into my first, I don't know what time it is. You gotta keep an eye on me, man, because I get jacked up on coffee. All right, anyway. So I roll into my mother gives me money. So here's how I roll into my first meeting, right? I got a pair of ragged old shorts on. It's a night meeting. And the place I'm going to is a rap center in downtown Long Beach. I got these ragged old shorts on, night meeting. I did have nice shoes. My buddy invited me to his wedding. I kept the shoes. So I got these shiny, like, black patent leather pumps on or whatever the hell I got on. I don't know if they're pumps. That's not the word. That's not for this kind of talk. Anyway. They're black, shiny shoes. All right, so anyway, I got those on, a pair of ragged shorts. I got a Dickies work shirt with just cigarette burn holes all over it. All my clothes had burn holes in them, you know, because I'd be smoking, I'd be hammered. I got to say something to you. So I put my cigarette down for a second. People would come up and go, dude, you're fucking on fire, man. No, no. You're on fire, asshole. just belligerent, man. I mean, Yeah, feel free to Google me. You'll just find a couple hundred thousand pages of idiot written large. So anyway, and that's how I roll. And my hair at the time is down to my elbows, full of knots. Little do I know there's a Jolly Rancher in the back of it, right? I am not kidding. I guess I had fallen asleep drunk, and the rancher fell out, and then it just slid around into the back. And then I just got up, and I'm like, I'm good. And so that's how I roll into my meeting. And I roll into this very first meeting, money from mommy in my pocket, walking tall, rolling that first meeting. What's up, loser, scumbag? Yeah, I know that dude from school, and I'm not like you. And let me tell you why I'm not like you, because I'm a smooth drunk. I'm a Cary Grant drunk. I have a couple drinks, and the first place it hits me is on the cheeks, right here. And they start getting tingly, tingly numb, that little numbly, tingly feeling you get right here. A couple more drinks, I start smiling. A couple more drinks, I start smiling even bigger. A couple more drinks, and I want to wrestle you. A couple more drinks, I decide I want to take a walk. I head down the street. It's night. See a light on. So I knock on the door. Hey! Saw the light on. What's going on in there? I'm a visiting drunk idiot, is what I am. I can't tell you the number of times I've got arrested just by wandering into the scene. I remember a cop told me one time they're arresting me at the scene, and he goes, how the fuck are you involved in this? I was walking by. And he goes, you're the only one going to jail. And I'll tell you, this is what was important about that. When I rolled into that meeting, do you want to know what I heard? I heard pride. Do you know that Alcoholics Anonymous is the only place besides prison where people try to be the worst? Yeah. Are you aware of that? I mean, you ever listen to this shit? Men and women wear the word homeless like a badge. I was homeless. They wear the word convict like a badge. I've been arrested 187 times, dog. Yeah, we'll go for 188. Unbelievable. Pride. Unbelievable and damaging. And not what this program was intended for. I'll tell you, for the people who've been arrested all those times, we need you in here, but not why you think we need you. We need you so when the next guy rolls through the door and says, I've been arrested 187 times, you walk up and say, yeah, me too, man. That's where my alcoholism took me. And you share your story. You know who else we need in here? We need the person that hasn't been arrested one time. Not one arrest. So when that person comes through the door and says, but I've never been arrested, you walk up and go, yeah, no shit, neither have I. And you tell your story. One way is how we use our stories to help God and our fellows. The other way is how we use them for pride. That's it, pride. And we forget it so much around here, man. What are we really doing in AA? Is that what we're doing? We come in here just to talk about what shits we were to people? That when sometimes people get up and they speak from the podium and they have this trail of just damage, we say, what a good speaker. Why? Because he hurt that many people? Does that make it good? Yeah, great. I'm glad he came to a happy end at the end. But some of those people and some of the repercussions for what we do to people, go on. You know, Bill Wilson in a letter said, we're so quick to talk about what ass kickers we all are, but we're not so quick to talk about the damage we have done to those that love us. Anyway, I got in an argument with this old timer one day. He was bitching about the success rate of Alcoholics Anonymous. I told him, you know what, bud? I go, you got a problem with this? It's your fault. I go, it's your fault, man. Don't sit here blaming it on young people, the success rate in AA, while you set back and just let shit go on in the name of your so-called tolerance. You're the problem, champ. Not us. You're the problem. You should have stepped up and said, no, we don't do that in here, man. Anyway, you go to a meeting, you go to any of these meetings you want, you make the topic anger, resentment, everybody in the room's got a hand up. You make it fear, everybody's got something to say. You make it depression, people are on their feet trying to get something out on that. Go to these meetings and make the topic, what was it like to read your fifth step to another person? See how many hands go up. Go in the meeting and make the topic, what was the hardest amends you have ever had to make? How did it go? See how many hands grow up. Are we encouraging recovery or are we encouraging bullshit? Anyway, I got sober on January 8th in 1989. Yeah, that's nice. And I appreciate that. But we also got to remember at the same time that we're not encouraging recovery with a heavy hand. There's a big difference. There's people that we encourage recovery by what we do, what we say, and how we treat people, not by telling other people how they should behave. So there is a difference, and we got to remember that, you know, because you go in some of these places and there's a very heavy hand on what's supposed to be going on, and it's not a heavy hand in AA because we're talking about connection with God. Anyway, I got sober on January 8th, 1989. I don't know why. It was a Sunday, man. One more day. One more day. You know, I had been trying to get sober for a year. I'd been in and out, in and out, in and out, coming late, getting a date, leaving early, in and out, in and out. And on January 8th, for some reason, I stopped. One more time I stopped, and I stayed stopped. And I stayed stopped for a year and a half. And I was sitting in a meeting one day, and I'd worked some bullshit steps and wrote some stuff out. And yeah, that's great. And I'm glad you're doing that. That's wonderful. I mean, I hear guys sometimes, they'll say, I make my people do a first step. I make them do a first step. Really? You make your people admit to their innermost self that they're an alcoholic? How the fuck do you do that? And I hear guys go, I make my people do a third. I make them do a third. Really? You make your men and women turn their will and their life over the care of God? How the fuck do you do that? We should send you to the Middle East. You can't make people do any of these steps. Yes, you can sit over them and you can make them write them down and you can make them kneel with you and you can make them do all that bullshit. But the journey from here to here is a long way, pal. Long way. And most of us alcoholics, we've been running game all our life where we can convince people that we have done something that we have not done. My friend Joe Millard used to say, pity the heart that's slow to learn what the quick mind sees at every turn. One thing to do it in the head, another thing to do it in the heart. At a year and a half sobriety, I'm sitting in these meetings, and every time I had said I was an alcoholic, a little voice said, bullshit, you are not. You are not like them, you are not like them, you are not like them. Doesn't matter, I was drinking every day. Doesn't matter what my life looked like. A little voice said, you don't belong, you don't belong, you don't belong. Year and a half of sobriety, all of a sudden I realized that I was going to drink again and you couldn't stop me. No hero sponsor, no 90 and 90, no memorizing every line in that book, I knew I was done for. I knew I was going to walk in these rooms one more time like I've done my whole life and say, I don't belong in here, I can do it on my own, walk out and get drunk one more time, and I woke up completely. And I thought to myself, oh my God, I'm done. I'm done, I'm done for, man. I don't know what to do. And I hit bottom at a year and a half sobriety. Bang, I hit bottom, and in the second after bouncing off that bottom, I thought, but they do it, and I see them do it, I see them do it, and if I do what they do, I can do this, I can stay sober, and power flooded in. Do you know that's when the book says power returns, before we've even done a third step prayer, when we look around and we believe that we can do this, it says, as we felt new power rush in. I'm going to shut up with this. I've learned a lot of stuff on this program. I've probably said that three times already, but I'm really going to shut up this time. Sometimes we look at people, and I'll say me, sometimes I look at people and say, brand new, what do you know about this? What do you know about that? What do you know about that? But let me tell you something. People in here know lots about everything. It's us. We have to be the learners, not the teachers, the learners. We got to watch and learn and see and listen and watch what's going on from no matter how much sobriety somebody has. And to not take our elders that are on this pedestal and put them up so fucking high that we treat them as they are somehow above being alcoholics, which is crazy. I mean, they may talk like Gandhi and Yogananda and all these assholes, all these other people. But let me tell you something. Gandhi and Yogananda do not have our disease. We do. Our egos can get so inflated, man, so out of control that these people, we can put them in danger of drinking again. Teach them like that. Anyway, we can learn from people around here. People that die, we can learn from. My sponsor says all the time, 45 years sober, he says, just because he got loaded doesn't make him a loser. Just means he got loaded. He's got a disease, Jack. Understand that. I learned the 11th step from a guy, and he died shortly after teaching me it. And what he said to me one day, He said, Jack, he goes, this 11 step reminds me of a musical term. He goes, you do music, right? I go, yeah, not that kind of shit. No, I don't do that. I do different, not that. And he goes, a sotto voce. A sotto voce, what? You know, and he walks off. That's all he said to me, sotto voce. So I go home and look it up. What is it? Sotto voce means the little voice beneath. The little voice beneath. And that's what we learn to do here. We learn to get in touch with the little voice inside. That God inside. We get to learn to get in touch with that little voice. And yeah, we make mistakes like the book says, and sometimes the little voice says crazy shit. And you know what I mean? But we try to listen to it. And real quick, I'll tell you, this guy called me one time. He was up in Washington. He goes, Jack, man, he goes, I am tripping. I'm hearing voices. I'm going, what do you mean you're fucking hearing voices? He goes, like, Field of Dreams voices, man. I go, dude, are you on medication? I don't need medication. I go, what do you mean hearing voices? He goes, yeah, this little voice goes, sell everything and go to Vegas. Sell everything and go to Vegas. I'm thinking, you're fucking nuts, man. So he calls me back a couple weeks. He goes, it's still saying it. Still saying it. Then he calls me back. He goes, Jack, I'm going. He goes, I'm going. I go, what? And he goes, yeah, man, little voice keeps saying, sell everything and go to Vegas. So he sells everything and goes to Vegas. And he gets on a plane, he gets off the plane, the little voice says, go to the Golden Nugget. Go to the Golden Nugget. So he goes to the Golden Nugget. The little voice says, lay everything on 22 black. Lay everything on 22 black. He lays his whole life on 22 black. The croupier spins a wheel. The ball bounces into 19 red. The little voice goes, shit. God, I am so sorry for ruining this tape even more. But so what this guy taught me is sotto voce. Sotto voce means the quiet voice underneath. In an orchestra, when everything's going on, all the craziness, little voice comes underneath. And a demonstration of that is I get on the freeway. And I'm on the freeway and I want to go somewhere and a guy cuts me off. So the first instrument that comes on is the timpanis. And they start pounding. Kill him, kill him, kill him, kill him, kill him. And then the next thing that comes in, the horns come in. Get around on the side, get around on the side and flip him off. Get around on the side, flip him off. And then the violins jump in. Get in front and slow down, get in front and slow down. So it's all going, going, going. And all of a sudden a sotto voce comes in and it says, let it go, man. You're not in a hurry, nowhere to go. Say a prayer. Let it go. Anyway, I want to thank you guys so much for having me.